As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
On today's episode of The Glue Guys, we're going to talk about the Nets aren't in the playoffs anymore, but we'll look forward. Brian, you and I are forward-looking people.
I don't want to. Sorry, no, it's fine. I'm past it. I'm processing.
Welcome back to The Glue Guys. This is Mike here. Say hello, Brian.
Hello. I wanted a flat one.
What do you think? What are you thinking about when you're walking into that bad boy of a hello?
Hello. It's like Danny Boy. The pipes are calling. It's a sad one. I was trying to do a sad. I just don't have the range.
Sad, a sad one. I understand. Yeah. I understand. We are The Glue Guys. You can find us at netsdaily.com and The Athletic. Get yourself behind that paywall, theathletic.com/glueguys. Ryan,
Mike.
The Nets
are somewhere back in the offseason. Yeah, they're back in the office.
It's kind of sad. So Brian and I made a strategic decision not to pod, really not for like any other reason than just, we just didn't connect personally.
I think we both just, we didn't make a strategic anything. We just, both of us didn't reach out to do a podcast.
Because the worst thing is, particularly the way the season ended, it would have just been, the pod would have been horrific. It would have been sad. We would have been stumbling and bumbling. But we're here now, refreshed and ready to go.
Not stumbling, not bumbling, ready to knock this one out of the park.
Fire off takes.
Yeah.
This episode, what we're going to do is we are going to look ahead at some of the big offseason decisions the Nets have to make because the Nets are in the offseason. But before we do that, we have to talk about, you and I haven't actually discussed Game 7 Bucks Nets. Not that we're going to go too in depth on it because everyone's already heard it already. And like, do we really want to talk about it too much?
No.
But what's your one big thought from, the Nets season. It's over.
It's pretty lame that the big takeaway that undid us was the friggin' injuries. You know, it's just a sad platitude of sports analysis that is, it's the least interesting. And in this case feels very true that, we had our one Kevin Durant who, God bless him, played his pants off. And James tried to hang in there, but ultimately, didn't, I think it was pretty clear that his health was compromised all the way through the very end there, and then Giannis, a dirty player.
I was going to ask you how we never properly discussed how we're supposed to feel about what Giannis did to Kyrie. Irving.
I actually straight up, I've found people have kind of been Giannis pro Giannis, I would say in the media, and I really found my disdain for Giannis over the course of this. I mean, this is obviously recently induced prejudice, but having been exposed to just how clunky and skillless his game is, people drag James Harden and Trae Young now for their game and hunting
the
for fouls
seeking,
is Giannis not just foul-seeking in a more earnest way. I mean, he's foul-seeking because he's the stronger, faster, taller guy in most cases, that he goes faster and, like, bangs into you. But he's got no finesse going on. That's oftentimes the best-case scenario is careening off somebody or, in many cases, stepping under them and injuring their ankles. Thank you very much. But
it's a very weird play. It's a very strange play. I mean, like, for Giannis to box out Kyrie as Kyrie's in the air, because that's what happened, is that Kyrie's in the air and Giannis steps in to box. This isn't a situation where a guy shoots a three and the defender's running out to try to block the shot but doesn't, but then ends up in the landing area of the shooter. This was Kyrie's shooting a layup. I mean, I know, like, who wants this take right now. It was a very weird play, and I feel like if DeMarcus Cousins had cared, which is always my go-to bad guy, but if he had gone and done that,
They have, like, this ready-made excuse built into Giannis, which is like, oh, he's only played for 10 years. You got to give him, he's got limited body control. It's like, this guy's the two-time MVP. Like, what are we talking about? He can't have it both ways. He can't be some bumbling, like, kid wearing jeans off the playground and also a multiple MVP, maybe, you know, one of the best players in the game right now. You cannot have that in equal doses.
Really, what we are playing out, and if Stanford University psychology students want to take this portion of the podcast and use it for their next thesis, they may. And if the thesis would be the effect of a 7-game series, because by the end of 7-game series, you hate everyone.
It's impossible.
I hated Brook Lopez by the end of. Brook Lopez. I was like, this guy is annoying. He makes crazy faces and complains all the time. And how could we as Nets podcasters ever hate Brook? He's been a friend of the show for many, many years. He's been on the show. But I hated him. I hate Pat Connaughton.
Patty?
Connaughton.
You hated Patty?
Hated him with every fiber of my being. Yeah. Chris Middleton didn't really hate, but a strong distaste for. It was like a cream soda. I don't hate cream soda, just distaste. Mm. And also, you know, the Bucks wear cream jerseys sometimes, so it's kind of a nice little
coincidence.
I think so. Before we, like, really look forward, I mean, we're not going to, like, do, like, our dive-in off-season preview, because that's, like, that would be obscene. That's but there much. Are some things to think about, and it's going to relate to what we just saw in the playoffs. Joe Harris 1, Bruce Brown 2.
People ask me specifically not to dog Joe Harris. Mike, are you gonna kowtow?
You should not have one of the worst playoff series in the history of the Nets.
He was good for the first few games, and he had a great series against Boston.
Cool. I'm happy for him. I'm happy that he had a few good games. I'm sorry. Like that, it is the Joe, and I'll get to the Joe Harris point when we get to the Joe Harris point. But the overall point is how bad he played is that now that question will be attached to Joe Harris until his next playoff series. Mm-hmm. That's how bad he played. It was so bad, and he was so shook that we won't be able to answer the question of whether Joe Harris is a reliable playoff performer until next postseason. And by next postseason, who knows if we're even here, Bri? You know, it's far away.
Some weird comments about Joe Harris from upper management in the last couple of days. Like, you know, him and Spencer, they're getting... I don't know. There feels like there's a chopping block happening right now, Mike. So that's the feeling. Well, we can get
blocks will be chopped.
Yeah.
Is that what the chopping block is? They chop blocks. My one big thing. This is it. And you said about the injuries. I think everyone kind of recognizes this, so that's why we want to have some perspective on what we're about to do. If the Nets had even just if Harden was healthy and KD was healthy, this series would have been over in 5. If Kyrie and KD were healthy the entirety of the series, series is over in 5. Like, any two of them were just healthy throughout the entirety of the series, it's over. Mm. Much less if all three were healthy all at the same time, then it probably would have been a sweep. It probably would have been a sweep, honestly. So it's like, how angry can you get? How much do you really want to pick it apart? How much do you really want to make fun of Joe Harris for not playing well? How much do you really want to key in on the fact that the Nets don't have a real center on the roster and that hurt them? And I have a solution to that problem coming up later in the show.
Yeah.
A big solution that I'm personally excited for. But and I'm sure people in the Discord have said it. I promise I'm not stealing Discord thoughts. It's the Nets weren't healthy. Just weren't healthy. I push this to you, Brian.
Okay.
And I think you kind of said this in our it's not even Google Hangout anymore. I think they call it Google Chat. I think they rebranded that section of the Gmail.
That could be happening, yeah.
You said this in the phone call. It's almost better for the Nets that they lose.
I mean, so here's let's. I gotta put this in the right context.
Said
this
to me, he said, "Mike, it's better that it happened. The championship would have sucked this year. It's better next year."
Here's the context. You and I would even go as far as to say, Mike, you're a Nets fan at this point. You've earned that mantle. Okay, do you want it? Do you even want that mantle? I'm not sure you do. But
I can't really say that.
Yeah, it's yours if you want. You're an objective journalist, Pulitzer Prize. Potentially winning someday. Who knows?
Someday.
But
when I crack open the Achilles injury pandemic,
it's all connected, man. It's all connected. And as a Nets fan, as a lifelong Nets fan, I've gotten used to the arc of the Nets being generally a downward trending arc. In the grand scheme of things, you know, I've meditated and journaled long enough to have a pretty healthy distance from the emotional, you know, fallout of getting booted in the second round of the playoffs due to injury. You know, that just happened because I've been through this part of the, I've just been through it. And here's the thing. Ultimately, as a Nets fan, it's all gravy right now. We get to watch Kevin Durant play some of the best basketball of his life for a team that we want to win. It's all that in the grand scheme of things, we should all just take a moment to appreciate that. Also, as a Nets fan, you know, we talk about how the Nets franchise is hiring. Part of the hiring process here in terms of like onboarding new fans is building a compelling narrative. Now, if I'm writing season one Game of Thrones, I don't want to give any spoilers.
Well,
people.
I mean, you could do this.
I don't want to spoil it.
You probably have not seen Ted Lasso.
I've not. I don't even know what that is.
Ted Lasso is like the great. It's the best new comedy TV show that has come out since Parks and Rec.
Shout out.
Whatever you want to say. It was an Apple TV show. Jason Sudeikis is an American football coach who goes to the UK to coach a soccer team. It's full of pluck and positivity.
Okay.
And Mina Kimes got mad at me for spoiling the end of WandaVision.
Yeah.
Which I do about. That actually hurt me that I did that to her.
Yeah. She was legitimately pissed at you, too. You could tell.
Yeah. She ended the Zoom call. No, she didn't. But the... And you can listen to that episode. It's still out there. Ted Lasso, end of season one. It doesn't end in victory. I'll just say it like that, okay? Yeah. It's about a soccer team. Does it end in victory?
Mm.
The Nets season one, as you're saying, the KD, Kyrie, James Harden Nets, didn't end in victory. And you made a really good point. Kevin Durant was so goddamn good that even in a loss, it was like, this is one of the most enjoyable ways to lose it could possibly happen, right?
Yes.
Like if KD's foot, if he wears size sevens like Brian does instead of size 13s like I do. what a lame joke.
Love that flex though.
Yeah.
13s.
then that's the game is over. Right, the game is over. That he wins on that shot against Middleton, so he is so great.
Mm-hmm.
This season, while fun, actually wasn't that fun. If we're gonna be real honest with ourselves, injuries, guys in and out of the lineup. We saw the big three for 8 full games, right, in the regular season. No fans. Here's the positivity. This is the positivity corner that you and I like to stake out on. Going into next season. Not only, hopefully, will you have a healthy Kevin Durant, James Harden, Kyrie Irving, that all of them together, fans will be in the stands for every game throughout the entirety of the season, hopefully. Harden and KD are going to be playing in the Olympics preceding that, which is exciting, that there'll be Nets Nation over there in Tokyo, and maybe they'll start recruiting Bam Adebayo or another guy to join the Nets. That's where these things happen, recruitment. And... Now it's the Nets are this super team with something to prove, right?
Little chip on the shoulder.
And I think the way that they lost to the Bucks, how close it was, and and they basically just had Kevin Durant. The way that they lost, the Bucks are probably, I would think, are the favorite to win the championship right now, in my mind. I mean, I know the Suns are doing really well, and you could go with the Clippers. I think the Bucks are probably the favorite in the Hawks series, and whoever they would play in the out of the Western Conference, they're going to be the favorites. The Nets almost beat that team, the Bucks, and they were like at 40% power, yeah. Right? They were their iPhone was on low battery mode, right? They weren't getting emails fetching on time.
No.
The fetching was off. They were getting late emails.
Yes.
They had the yellow battery instead of the white battery. It was
the worst.
It was an ugly scene.
Yeah.
The Nets are going to come in 100% full bar. They're just going to be streaming video for 8 hours on their phone. That's how much power they're going to have next season.
Yeah, so, and in terms of building that narrative arc, like, this is how generous I am mostly. This is a me. This is a me thing. Is that, yes. You know, in creative, I mean, I deserve a championship. I've been here since I used to watch, you know, Chris Gatling lay bricks all night long in the Meadowlands. I've earned this championship. But here's what I want. I don't want to just do it alone. I don't want to do it alone. I want everybody
yes.
to come along with me. And part of that means having a little patience while, you know, we talked about this, having these bedazzled mercenaries on our team, right? And in any good narrative arc, there's a Han Solo moment, right? It's where your mercenary finds his philosophical, his dharma, his reason for doing the right thing. You know, we kind of saw Kevin Durant, like, mercenary or not, live and die out there playing 53 minutes or something last night or two nights ago. And just leave it all on the court, full blown. You know, and I think it's without those moments and even without a little bit of the loss that comes from all that stuff, you can't see the human side of it. You know, I feel like going into next year, the people who we brought on in this initial pursuit, that really helped anneal their interest in the Nets long term. Now they've got, if it was just straight winning, it's hard. It's just hard to have a lasting relationship.
It would be awesome, and it is a little, like, it's sad the Nets lost. Like, I was excited to talk about this team for at least another series or two. Championships are fun. Championship parades are great. It would have been amazing. 100%. So, like, all of that, yes, of course, you'd rather win a championship. It will be more fun if it happens next year. Because this year, this super team that never had a chance to gel, if they had won a championship, it would have felt like, oh, so it's that easy? You know, it just would have felt too easy.
Yeah.
It's like, I was going to do an analogy about virginity, which I'm not going to do.
Why not?
You know, I'm just not going to make a virginity analogy at this moment.
Okay.
But.
Your prerogative.
Next year, some delaying gratification will be excitement.
You're saying we're edging. We're edging into next year. That's what you're saying. That's a long time to edge. Not for me, but for some people, it's a long time to edge.
All right, let's take a quick break. Yeah. Coming back, we're really going to look, because there's a lot of big questions that the Nets are facing. We're going to dive each into every. Yes. We're not just going to edge. We're going to explode
it'll
into
be,
all those
it'll
questions.
It'll be tantric. Positively tantric.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day, or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And we're back. Thank you, Brian, for waiting for so long for all those ads. I appreciate all of our ad partners on the show.
Love them.
First off, so, and I will admit fully, a lot of what I'm about to say, all the information, a lot of it has been pulled from the NetsDaily.com, Net Income's article on, like, he has a really great piece of all the things that Sean Marks and the front office have to consider about which players are staying, who may go, and all that type of stuff. So a lot of this is from there, and I appreciate stories like that. It really lays it out cleanly. The Nets, while have a pretty firm core of superstars who are returning, also have to make extension decisions with those superstars, whether KD, Kyrie, and Harden all actually want to make an extension, or if they rather just kind of ride it out as it keeps going. Dinwiddie has opted out. Bruce Brown is a restricted free agent. Vets like Jeff Green, Blake Griffin. I was going to say Mike James, but I don't know where to really place Mike James in this conversation. And I would hope we don't talk
about him. At the forefront where he belongs.
And then there's some like end of the bench young guys like Chioza, Reggie Perry, Timothy Luwelo, Caparo. There's a lot of things to figure out with this team and what they need.
Sure.
Can I start with a really super big question, though?
Please.
That still relates to the Bucks series.
Okay.
There is a hint, a whisper of a question around the Nets.
A whisper of a question.
If you were watching the Bucks series, the worst player on the Nets who was getting paid the most amount of money is Joe Harris. It makes like $16 to $18 million a year. Mm-hmm. His contract is at 16, I think, next year too. Then it goes up to 18, 19 the following 2 years. He was bad. I will be very honest. He is a large chunk of the reason why the Nets aren't moving on to the next round.
Wow.
He missed key shots. Game seven, he had an open three. That in the fourth quarter near the end of the game, that if he hits that shot, which he usually does, gives the Nets more to an advantage. And, you know, obviously things can happen differently after that point. But
you're in butterfly effect territory, Mike, reliving, you know.
I know. It's too far. But anyways, I'm going to ask you, do you think about doing anything with Joe Harris, his contract, and saying, you know what, maybe as great as Joe Harris is in the regular season, maybe he isn't what we consider to be a playoff player. Maybe he's a guy who in the playoffs, what he does well in the regular season, teams end up just like it can scout it a little bit better, and we know he's not going to be as effective in the postseason. Should we consider moving Joe Harris for something else and whatever that other thing is? Or is Joe Harris 100% a Net, as actually Sean Marks did say today?
But. Well, I'll put it like this. I'm open to moving anybody not named the big three, but I just want to make sure that we're talking about it for the right reasons, okay? Like, Joe Harris he shot 51.3% from three in the Boston Celtics series. Now, I get that that's not like a big series. I get that. And if we're trying to play Sigmund Freud, okay, and we're trying to get inside of his head and figure out what's making those dials turn, if that's the argument that we're making, you know, we need more data than just he was good in the Boston series and then bad for the second half, really, of the Milwaukee series. If we're gonna make the argument that he's like damaged goods, which is basically what we're saying.
Here. That's what we're saying. Yeah,
like that he can only reach a certain, you know, point of competition level before he's knees weak, mom spaghetti on his sweater already. Then, you know, that's an argument that I can entertain. I just feel like we need more. I hate to say it because I know that, like, you know, I mean, and again, he's a role player ultimately on this team. And so, like, you know, you can look down the bench. He's the most well-paid role player. So it's fun and easy to target that guy.
Quite well-paid. Yes.
At the highest, he is the King Midas of role players. No, King Midas, he turned things to gold.
He wasn't well-paid. He just made things. Doesn't matter.
Rockefeller. He's the, I don't know. Someone.
He's the Julia Roberts of role players.
Yeah.
Right? I don't know.
Yep. She was a well-paid actress. Runaway bride. An anxiety issue.
There you go.
you know, I don't like to sit behind my microphone here with, you know, my green screen and speculate about people's anxiety problems.
No, but I mean, we just have to be honest. Like, he did not play well. Like, it was more than just he missed shots.
I get it, but
he was bad on defense.
We're trying to build. He didn't drive the ball at all. Let's call it like it is, Mike. Yeah. We're trying to say he's got a problem with performing in big moments. That's, I mean, ultimately, that's what we're trying to say.
We talk about edging. We talked about, you know, one of our sponsors is Roman.
Yes.
You know, if you're a problem with your performance, you might want to check out Roman.
Check out Roman.
Roman.com/glue. Get yourself some help.
Love that.
If you need it.
Love when that happens. But I'm just saying, like, we're trying to, you know, make a very specific case about.
You're afraid to say what you want to say.
I'm not. I'm just saying, I think it's interesting to be like, we should trade this guy because at like high pressure playoff moments, that's where he just like has a cap. I think that's an interesting like reason to trade a guy who basically is, you know, one of the most efficient three-pointer, you know, he's a specialist, blah, 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 everyone knows. And he's more than just a three-point shooter, Mike. Don't forget. He can do a whole
But he didn't do any of that in the playoffs.
He didn't do any of that.
So part of what I think with the Joe Harris trade discussion, and I'll come out and just say, they're not going to trade him unless there is someone out there that they think can really help their team. Because one, he is an expensive player. So the guy you're trading for is also going to be another expensive player. If you packaged him and DeAndre Jordan together, which I don't know what team would want those two people together necessarily. Joe Harris is a valued asset, but DeAndre is a negative at this point. But if you put those two guys together, that's about $28 million in a deal. That's 27, 26, whatever it is. You can get a really good player at that price. There's a lot of guys in the NBA that can fit into that salary cap slot. But who are you going to bring in that is better than Joe Harris, right? Like, because, like, what would you want? I think if you were to create the perfect player, it would basically be Joe Harris, but a better defender, like an actual better defender. As much as, like, we defend Joe's defense, he was bad in the playoffs. He was bad against Boston, and he was bad against the Bucks. He was exposed. He wasn't exposed. I'm not saying that, but he was not good.
Yeah. A feeling I didn't like was that I was looking over jealously at Pat Connaughton, which is I never want to feel that way, but that's
the. And he showed up. Yeah. He scored 9 points in game 7. I think it was 9 points in game 7, and I don't know what Joe scored, but like Pat Connaughton also shouldn't be playing better than Joe Harris.
He did. He just had very meaningful. Whenever Pat Connaughton hits a shot, I just feel like I remember it very clearly. You know, it just feels timely. He's got that. He's got clutch. It could be an Irish thing. I don't know. Could be.
So it's going to be a very interesting discussion. Part of also what weighs into the Joe Harris thing is like, do the big three trust Joe? Because we've seen guys move in and out of the lineup because Harden, KD or Kyrie don't trust someone. And in the playoffs, Nash basically eliminated his bench by the end because he couldn't trust Nick Claxton. He couldn't trust, you know, anyone but basically Jeff Green, Joe Harris, and I don't know, who else got minutes in that final game? Bruce Brown. You know, like, that's all Steve Nash could trust. Joe Harris played a bunch of minutes in the playoffs, so I think there's still trust there. Joe Harris is way better than Landry Shamet. But here's a scenario where you do it, okay, where you do a Joe Harris trade. It's one, it's where you know you're going to be able to flip him for, like, a really versatile 3-and-D guy who his three-point shot is, like, kind of more average, but the defense is really there, and you're sending him to a team that, like, really needs that three-point shooting that Joe Harris could do. Like, I don't know what that mythical team is, but it could be out there, hypothetical. I don't know really why I said mythical. And you would do that if you also know, and this is, everyone's going to love this, if you're going to get J.J. Redick on a vet min deal. Because
Which is locked up, basically. That's ready for if you want it.
Right. J.J. Redick, like...
I mean, we might do that. We might do that anyways.
Has worn a Nets jersey, like, on every podcast.
Under his Pelicans jersey, he had a Nets jersey.
You know how Michael Jordan would wear the Tar Heels, the University of North Carolina shorts underneath his Bulls shorts? He would wear his college shorts. Like, J.J.'s doing the same thing with a basket jersey. He's wearing... Is that how you say it? Right? Basket?
I don't know what that is.
That's the artist who the Nets.
Basquiat.
Basquiat.
Yeah.
I should know that. I mean, they wear that jersey like all the time at this point. I should know that.
I thought you were trying to say like basketball and just it's like, what is happening?
Just being pretentious.
Yeah.
I will say that. So if you're Sean Marks and Steve or JJ Redick's texting you and saying, I'm playing for your team. You don't have to sign me. I'm just going to play. I'll play for free. I just want to live in Brooklyn. I want to do my podcast and then get KD, Kyrie, Harden on as guests. Mm. Like if I would, I understand that completely. So if you get JJ Redick, he's like a 75% approximation, maybe even better of like, not better, but like maybe 85% of Joe Harris. Right. Hey, bro. Sorry, my son.
Baby time.
Hey, bro. Is mommy out there? Okay. Go get mommy.
Nice. Handled well.
And then you can say, okay, I know that the Orlando Magic or the Indiana Pacers or whatever team, because Joe Harris would be desired, even though he has a high salary. He's one of the best three-point shooters in the league. So if you know that you're going to get JJ, plus there's a team out there that could really use Joe Harris, and you could get someone that's a bigger wing, versatile, doesn't need the ball like Joe, but also can like do a little bit of extra stuff. That's when you do a Joe Harris trade. But beyond that, like, in as you said, J.J. Redick may still be on this team, and you, Joe Harris, that'd be great. Then you can move Landry Shamet if you want to at that point.
Yeah. How buried in is DeAndre? I mean, surely he can't be long for this. We'll get there. I'm sorry. Getting
there. No, no. Let's get there right now. I posted up my finger for the YouTube audience. My finger was raised.
Okay.
Because that means that's a signal for a great point, Brian.
Oh, great.
DeAndre Jordan, let's get to that.
Yeah.
So the Joe Harris thing, like I think we're in agreement. It's basically don't freak out. Don't just trade him because he didn't play well for four games, right? It's let him be on the team. And then if you have to trade him next year or whatever, you do that. He's probably going to be better in the playoffs next year when he's playing with Harden, KD, and Kyrie. Okay.
Let's hope.
DeAndre Jordan, 2 years left on his contract. About $9.5 million per year. He didn't play. I don't know if you know this. Didn't play basketball.
We called that wrong. I honestly thought he was going to get at least some token garbage time minutes. Nothing. Nada.
Nada. Nothing. And I had said boldly that he would play in the first game.
Yeah, that was bold.
That was a lie.
I wanted to shake you when you said that.
Here's the thing about DeAndre Jordan. Okay, so for the Nets to get rid of him. The Nets have like four picks in the NBA draft coming up.
Yeah, but they're all bad.
They're all bad, and you know, like there's teams like the Thunder and people like that. Like there's actually a very few bucket of teams that have salary cap space that would use that space to get draft picks and all that stuff. One of those teams, I guess, could be the Houston Rockets. The Houston Rockets have a lot of salary decisions they have to figure out. Like Victor Oladipo is going to be, oh no, he's already in Miami, right? Or something like that. But they have some guys that they need to figure out. But they're a team that's not trying to take on any money at all because their owner, Tillman Fertitta, you know, had money troubles and all that stuff. So what you could do with DeAndre is one of two things. It's one, you basically take those draft picks and you just say to the team, hey, you can have basically all of them. And you get DeAndre Jordan for 2 years and we get to save money. Or you stretch provision him. You know, you save $5 million per year because you stretch it out over 4 years. And that actually saves even more money for Joe Tsai because it would save money on luxury tax and all that stuff. Let me ask this to you, though, Brian. There's a person at the center of this, DeAndre Jordan.
Okay.
Do you think he wants to be here? Like, do you think there's a sense of like, I don't want to leave because if I go anywhere else, like, what am I going to do? Just play for a bad team and make the veteran minimum? You know what I mean? Like, where's he going to go? What team would want DeAndre Jordan at this point?
I don't
want
to speak out of turn here. I think DeAndre is pretty happy where he is, even despite the not playing, which if there was a little bit of playing, I think he'd like that better. But I think he's fine with the not playing and hanging out with his friends on an elite team rather than – probably also not playing in, you know, the hinterlands of the NBA somewhere. I think he would like to stick it out. If I could
guess. Is he done, do you think? Is there a version of like DeAndre starts eating meat in the off season and gets big again, not to be anti-vegan, but he starts eating meat again and then he starts winning like he's
You don't need like to eat meat to get thick. You can just eat cheese. Oh no, it's vegan. Wait.
There's never been, by the way, in the history of sports It's always been, I am now vegan, and then like best shape of my life, right? I would love it just for just a curveball, not because I'm like a hardcore meat eater.
Yeah.
If he just, it was like, I started eating bacon and steaks, and then he got back to his 20-10, three blocks a game cell.
He doesn't even need to, he can just drink beer and eat bread, because croissants and beer, that's all you need.
So do you think he's done? Or is it just because it was like playoff time? That's why I think he's basically done.
This was the most egregious not like DNPs I've seen from a guy who like basically played starter minutes the first half of the season. And just that duality of now you're done and we never see you again it's sort of unprecedented, and especially for a guy that just like wasn't injured, doesn't like it's just
no.
I could have
been used in a series where you're playing against a really big team.
Do you think any part of you think like maybe we should just have given it a look against the Bucks at some point? Just a little bit. I mean, we lost some games. We did lose 4 out of the 7 games, and a couple of them weren't, you know, particularly well. Game 4, I would have stuck him in there at some point. I feel like I don't know, maybe there's something we don't know. Maybe there's just like true animosity about this dude that we're not like figured out yet. I find that, you know, that's just me speculating. I have no reason to believe anything.
Well, no. But I will say you and I, while DeAndre was playing, there was so many moments where James Harden would basically just not yell at him, but be like, explain, mansplain.
He was mansplaining his face off every second of every game. I felt uncomfortable for DeAndre at that point.
Yeah, and Steve Nash is connected enough to what is, I think, what his stars feel like, to know that he was given the creative freedom to bench DeAndre, right? Like, if Kevin Durant thought DeAndre Jordan could help them in a series, Kevin Durant would have said to Steve, hey, maybe we should play DeAndre, and Steve Nash probably would have done it. Not as a command, just as like, hey, I'm a good listener. The DeAndre Jordan thing is like, I think he's on this team partly also because his contract, while is terrible and one of the worst in the NBA, is helpful in trades. Like, if you stretch provision him, you can't trade him. You can't trade his stretched out contract. He's just on the books. There's nothing there. It's just a negative. Where if he's on your team, maybe you get some minutes for him, whatever, and you can just throw him into any deal and you say, yeah, we'll have to pay an extra few second round picks to do that, but at least it's a contract that matches up with something. So I think he's on the team, unless if it's like DeAndre Jordan's like, I really don't want to be here.
I'm wondering, like, it's an interesting, well, I mean, I guess, because also Claxton didn't play basically that entire series either.
Yeah.
So like, it feels to me a very purposeful, we're going small, you know, business decision, as they say, which you can go back and forth on. But it's like, I wonder at the top levels if they, I mean, I guess because it's in a long series of DNPs. So you have to assume that it's just like he's on, you know, indefinite DNP status. It's a weird thing. I wonder if he also just isn't a kind of guy that we lean on more in the regular season because that matters less for a team with deep playoff aspirations like ours. And, you know, we want to make sure everyone's well rested. And that's another sort of thing. But again, like, we just didn't do that towards the end. And maybe that was because we needed to get Nick Claxton some reps. It's hard to know. It's hard. I wish Steve Nash made himself available to us so that we could ask him. But in lieu of that, we'll just keep grasping at straws here, Mike.
Someone who was very important to the Nets playoff run, and particularly against the Bucks, was Bruce Brown. And, like, I did not think to start the season, while you and I, like, both supported the Bruce Brown trade, I didn't think I'd have to grapple with the idea that him being a restricted free agent this offseason would, like, shake me to my core. That, like, there's a chance that Bruce Brown won't be a Net. And it's actually probably a better chance that he won't be a Net. Bruce Brown is a restricted free agent. And if you kind of sniff around, there's not like too many reports of like, hey, this is how much money Bruce Brown is going to get. The thing that I did, which I always do in free agency, is just look at comps and look at how much guys got paid in the past and see if there's, you know, like a guy like Bruce Brown, other players like him, how much money they've got paid. Okay. Two important numbers to know. There's the mid-level exception and the taxpayer mid-level exception. The full mid-level non-taxpayer is 9.5 next year, next season, whatever this off-season is. I think that's the that's the estimate, but or exact. The taxpayer mid-level, which is what the Nets will have, is 5.9. Now, here are a couple of guys who make just about the full mid-level, the 9.5. De'Anthony Melton, Jay Crowder, Derek Jones, DeLon Wright, Royce O'Neal. Those are all guys that feel pretty Bruce Brown-y. Mm-hmm. Don't you think? Like, those are, like, Derek Jones Jr. way overpaid because he really wasn't that good. De'Anthony Melton's a better shooter, but basically is sort of like Bruce Brown. Jay Crowder's more proven, but again, they're essentially the same player. Royce O'Neal and DeLon Wright. DeLon Wright's horrible and all that stuff. So that feel like $9.5 million to the Nets. The Nets have the ability. I think they have Brown's bird rights. They have the ability to sign him for whatever amount of money they need to. But that's a lot of money for a team that is as high into the luxury tax as they are.
Yeah.
The just for reference sake, the taxpayer mid-level exception guys, the guy that the $5.9 million, that's your Alex Burks, Ish Smith, Avery Bradley, and Justin Holiday. I think Bruce Brown is better than all four of those players at this point. I think he's more important. The fact that he was on a high-profile Brooklyn team ended up being one of the guys that they relied on most in the playoffs. I think that proved to a lot of other teams that, hey, Bruce Brown's worth something. Do you think Bruce Brown's going to come back to the Nets?
So I'm going to give this a lot of thought. I got time, so I got some time to think.
Yeah, this is just freelancing thoughts, yeah.
One of my initial concerns with Bruce was, you know, towards the end of that series against Milwaukee, he was getting targeted on offense when we had the ball. They wanted to get somebody to pass the ball to Bruce Brown, like let him sort of float out to the perimeter, and then put him on an island by having his defender slag way off of him, and then everyone face guarded their guy when he got the ball. So it put him in an awkward position to make a bad pass or shoot a shot that he doesn't want to shoot or try to dribble. And the limitations, again, friend of the show, love Bruce Brown, super huge fan of Bruce Brown. I do think he got a little bit exploited in that series. So
Brown, you're trying to drive his value down. Oh my God! Oh, you're awful.
I'm playing 4D.
Trying to make money over
I'm
here.
I'm playing 4D chess, Doc. I want the Nets to wrap him up. So I'm trying to put out. Come on, come on, go with me here. I know the execs are going to be listening, so I'm just trying to plant some. I'm pouring poison in their ears. Is what I'm doing, Mike.
I love it. I absolutely love it
because I want to keep Bruce Brown, but I want to do it at a reasonable price. That's me. I'm selfish. I mean, I always want to ever get it paid, but like, I also, you know, I know that we won't be able to keep him if we pay him what he's asking for. So
exactly.
You know, I'm torn between Nets fandom and Bruce love. What do I do? So I pour poison in the exec's ears. This is what I do, Mike. And I say that he has these very specific limitations that make him a liability in a 7-game series and hope for the best.
My thing is like Bruce Brown or whatever. So Bruce Brown for John and Musa is a massive plus, right? The guy who made that trade is still running the team. Bruce Brown at $9.5 million a year, while I support it, if you're the Washington Wizards, if you're a team that is looking for defense, toughness, and you're not that good, Brown makes a whole lot of sense to you.
I didn't even think of the Wizards, and that's such a – I mean, the Wizards are going to do that. That's just going to happen.
Yeah. But for the Nets, like, let's be honest. If the Nets had Kyrie, Harden, KD – We're going to be okay if Bruce Brown leaves, and I think that you could get a Bruce Brown approximate for cheap again. You're not going to get someone as good as because Bruce really showed a lot. Like in the end, like kind of a guard who could be in the paint and shoot those floaters against 7-footers and to be willing to set screens and do the dirty work like that. That is a rare player,
totally.
But you could find a guy kind of like that somewhere else.
I mean, he's super unique, and those delts, you can't just, you know, slap those on just anybody. Those are au naturel, and they are responsible for some of the best picks in the biz. It'd be a huge loss. He's kind of a really unique role player. I mean, ultimately, and here's the thing: like, if Landry Shamet, for example, tacks on a little bit more doggedness onto his game and, you know, really commits to being like the defensive first guard. Like, there's a couple guys that can fill some part of that void, because that's really like we had just a Chris Middleton, a middle ditch problem towards the end of those games. And, you know,
I don't know why I laugh every time at that, but I always laugh at it.
Because it's great. It's my best joke. But we have a problem with him. And like, I felt like, why don't we have someone like Landry Shamet who can like try, like, you know, Chris Middleton's good. He's not great, I don't think. And his moves are like, you know, he wants to be, he's a Rip Hamilton, you know, and Landry Shamet is designed specifically, his sleek frame is sort of designed to chase a guy like that around. And he just kind of like wasn't there to be put. He's a young man. And he wasn't ready for that position, I guess. There's a couple places where I feel like there's leveling up to be done from the role players that can help fill these gaps. Shamet, I'm looking at you, you know, obviously Claxton, so on and so forth. So if push comes to shove, we lose Bruce Brown, which honestly, it seems fairly imminent. So I think everyone needs to like get ready for that, because it seems like it's going to happen. If I'm a betting man, you know, get ready for your Bruce Brown bottle champagne send off. You know, that's where I want to see other guys step up and fill a considerable gap he'll leave behind, Mike. Considerable.
Hey, well, you're going to hear an awkward transition. This is actually the awkward transition. While Brian and I were recording our pod, my power went out. And because we're doing virtual recording, the Zoom died. So this is me ending the pod. So if you hear this little section, the pod is going to be over in 10 seconds. But Brian and I will have so much more about this Nets team all summer long. Do not fret. Thank you for listening.